Let's go to Psalm 19. Period between, well, not just the period, but the Fast of Tammuz and the period between it and the Fast of Ab. Throughout the Talmud, its purpose is the total and complete destruction of idolatry. We've talked about this a long time ago, but the idea that there is a great transgression, one has to, there's a one source of idolatry. Actually, there's only one idol. And what is the source of that development of that idol? And so let's look at Psalm 19 and see if we can figure it out. You should read the whole thing, but just for now, we're going to start in verse 12. The psalmist asks the question, who can understand his errors? Cleanse thou me from secret faults. Keep back thy servant also from presumptuous sins. Let them not have dominion over me. Then shall I be upright, and I shall be innocent from the great transgression. Let the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. And the question is, what is the great transgression, which universally is said to be the source of all idolatry? Now, we spent a long time studying this back in 1988. I don't know if anybody remembers it.
I just remember us talking about the great transgression.
In fact, we had a few lists made of the great transgression.
Was that 1989?
No. Well, we probably extended. We probably extended to 1989, but I've got it in my notes. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 2, see if we can see something else. Verse 8. Chapter 2, verse 8, starting in verse 8. It is said of Christ, thou hast put all things in subjection under his feet. For in that he put all in subjection under him, he left nothing that is not put under him. Now, you have to understand that in biblical language, for something to be under him means that he is in complete control of it. So what we're about to talk about, he did it for his purpose. It doesn't seem like it would be possible for him to do it for his purpose. But what I believe is the source of the development of all of your idolatry comes from not knowing that everything is in subjection under him. And then it goes on to say, but we see not yet all things put under him. For in that he put all in subjection under him, he left nothing that is not put under him. Now every time you see that something is wrong, or every time you get exhorted about something and you don't understand it, then you're convinced that there's a whole area of life that isn't under him. The perfect example this morning of that there is a right way and a wrong way for the chairs to be. But and for Harry, that is as true as breathing. And each one of us has a whole range of things where there is quote unquote a right way and a wrong way to do it. I don't think people should eat black-eyed peas. I certainly don't think people should eat garlic. I know you think it is. I don't think people should use Pine Sol in the room when they're cleaning. I know what it is. I'm speaking for Betty there now. There's a whole range of things that each one of us believe that are not the right way. By definition, every one of those belief systems is an idol. And they're revealed in these simple details, everyday details of life. Because whenever we think that there is a right way and a wrong way, then we are saying that all is not in subjection under him. And in fact, we're saying that our idea of the way it should be is the best. In fact, in many cases, we believe it's the only way it should be. The right way. Now, every time something like that occurs in your mind, the Bible calls that idolatry. Because you don't have then the capacity to believe that every moment is exactly as it should be, because all things are put under him. Does everybody understand that premise?
I understand that premise, but what I don't and have never understood is, I don't even know how to say it. We're given the ability to know when something is out of order, or I'll just leave it at that, out of order. If I were to rearrange these chairs right now so that you didn't have the chair you sit in every morning, and in fact if somebody sat at that end of the table in that chair, we would all think something was out of order.
It doesn't mean it is.
Well, then let's all move.
I don't care.
No, I don't.
I know you say you don't care, but you're playing with me right now. You understand my point.
But that's the point. There is no balance. That's idolatry. And until we're able to see through the idolatry so that we can confess it, then we're locked into that idolatry. And at the core...
Well, then it's true to say that we, this group of people, we agree to share common idolatry for the purpose of making things smoother and easier?
That's right.
We do that.
Right.
Okay.
But it's not right that we do it.
I'm not talking about whether it's right or not. I'm talking about that's what we do.
Right.
Because this always causes dissonance in me.
Okay.
We sit and we talk about this, and then we go about and we go, somebody has got to do lunch today.
Okay.
And if it ain't done, then there's something wrong.
Well, again, that's why we must be open to see that those schedules, things, times are all rooted in idolatry. And as long as we can understand it, then we can have an agreement that that's what we're going to do. But
if it doesn't happen,
you shouldn't get upset about it.
Because it's when things don't happen that your idolatry is revealed.
Right.
If somebody sits in that chair and you get all upset about it,
And I used to.
Like,
I think if your mother was here, she'd go sit in that chair.
Right.
Refuse to move.
And she that's exactly what she used to do to me.
Which is where you get it.
All right.
The whole point is how you respond to it. It's not the thing.
Well, but my point is I don't know if you've noticed, and I haven't been here very much to eat in here lately, but I've stopped asking people to move if they're in this chair. And so, but initially that was just terrible to me because I needed this chair because I needed to have a place to lean my back. You know, I've got a jillion excuses, but it's still idolatry.
No, I fully understand that. I just need what we just said.
Okay.
Because
Well, let's look at what that means. We see not yet all things put under him, but we see Jesus. So if you hear that correctly, what it's saying is that the times in which you think something is wrong is the opportunity to see Christ,
yeah.
Which is incredible. Does everybody grok that? And that's when you should have called somebody. See, that's, again, I mean, not to change the subject, but it almost never in the years and years and years we've been together have you called me when you had a problem, except when it became major, like when Angela was totally and completely rebellious. But that is the source, that is part of this, what we just read about, the great transgression, the independent, self-sufficient I. Okay? I'm asking you to change. I'm asking you to see what it is. Then if you can see that it's the great transgression, then you can say, Father, forgive me. You don't go make a vow now that you're going to call me every 5 minutes. I don't want you to do that either. Okay.
I guess what it is that bothers me is if we agree to change the idolatry we've agreed on, then that's okay with me too. It's like this morning for me, what was going on was at 7:30 we want to start because at 8 o'clock we want to be done within a few minutes. That's what we've agreed on. And
what is that?
I'm just testing idolatry.
Okay.
So I'm feeling there's that agreement, and I have a role to play in that. So I'm doing everything I can to fulfill that agreement.
Yeah, but the issue and your role at for a long time now, your role has been to make our idolatry obvious.
Yeah, and see, sometimes that irritates me too, because if I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, making little quote marks if you're at home, if I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, I don't like being made a laughingstock
for
trying to do what it is I should be doing.
Well, but that's part of it too. All right, now let's go on. We see not yet all things put under him, but we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels, for the suffering of death, crowned with glory and honor, that he, by the grace of God, should taste death for every man. For it became him for whom are all things, and by whom are all things, in bringing many sons unto glory, to make the captain of their salvation perfect through sufferings. Now, if the captain of our salvation was made perfect through suffering, again, experiencing things he didn't like without complaining, then we are as he is. For both he that sanctifieth and they who are sanctified are all of one. In other words, if we could see correctly, we are never, ever, ever separated from him, from life. But just keep that thought. For which cause he is not ashamed to call them brethren. He understands what we've just talked about. He understands what Harry is going through when these things happen and why he acts like he does and why he gets upset. And because he went through it all. Can you imagine his frustration with dealing with those two-bit disciples? I mean, it's got to be incredible. All right, we're going to continue now. Saying, I will declare thy name unto my brethren. In the midst of the church will I sing praise unto thee. And again, I will put my trust in him. What it says in Greek is only in him. And again, behold, I and the children which God hath given me. For as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, he also himself likewise took part of the same. Now, there's no way that we can, in our present state, can understand the magnitude of that saying. That here the Son of God became a human. Not only did he become a human, he became a what do you call it, in the womb, a little baby, a little thing. And he then grew in the womb, then was birthed, and then he was as helpless, crying when he was hungry, crapping in his pants, wetting his diapers, everything that we went through, he went through. Now this, until you begin to see this, Christ will remain a goal or he'll become your golden calf, your idol, instead of the understanding that we are one with him. Now is the we're back now to the great transgression. That through death he might destroy him that had the power of death, that is, the devil. Now, how did he destroy him? Because he took on, as both Son of Man and Son of God, he took on himself the curse. Which is, that's almost impossible for us to understand. And he nailed the curse to the tree. Can you imagine such a sacrifice? Because he had to nail himself as Son of Man to the cross. He had to be nailed.
When you say the curse, do you mean the effect of the fall?
Yes.
God's judgment,
right,
of Adam and Eve?
Well, right, and all the effect of that. But the main effect of that curse was what we're about to talk about. The main effect of that curse was the separation from the source of life, the separation from God. Now what? That he, through death he might destroy him that had the power of death, that is the devil, and deliver them who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. The fear, I mean, nobody fears death. I mean, I don't, maybe there's some psychotics that run around are being afraid of death. But everybody fears separation. Separation is death to you as a human, as a hunk of protoplasm. And all of the things and all of the activities that one does are in response to that great transgression. The great transgression is the fear of death. And therefore you've been in bondage your entire life. Is that communicating? Does everybody understand that at a deep level? Now, let's talk about how that was manifested.
Well, it's like you circumscribe your arena so you'll be pretty okay, and then you do stuff so you don't have to think about, you know, be silent or be faced with yourself. You know, you fill up everything to keep going.
And that's why people
not be distracted. You know?
You constantly have noise in the temple, so you don't have to You don't have to face your aloneness. That's the real function of mind talk. Now watch. No, when you were a little baby, you could not assess the world as it is. Your world was puzzling. Everything was a strange, fearful adventure. I mean, we can't remember this, but I guarantee you it's true. Your basic formation, when we were little kids, little babies, little zygotes or whatever we were, there was anxiety in the face of helplessness. Anxiety in the face of helplessness is the essential function, essential molding thing of what it means to grow up. Now, because you've done all these tricks and there's all these inventions and all these, there's television, there's radio, there's movies, there's everything to cause noise so that you don't face this anxiety. That's why I've said so often that every invention of man since the cross has been an attempt to flee from the revelation of Christ. Because in order to understand and know the revelation of Christ, you have to face your existential helplessness. Is that understandable? Now you don't want to do that. You don't want to go down those stairs. You don't want to open that door. Now during the long span of what we call immaturity, You lock in your mind the I am and the I am nots. Now, because of the vulnerability, you create all these, it's really magic or spells or sorcery or different things that you do to try to survive in your mind as this small little being. Now, you know, that's why, like, Mickey Mouse is admired by children over in the entire world, in every culture. Why? Because he tricks the dangerous yet stupid cat. And that's why kids relate to it. Because the cat to them is everything that they don't understand and is somehow dangerous. And so because the cat, but the mouse, this stupid little mouse, is able to trick the cat. That's why Walt Disney was such a genius, because he tapped in to the basic fears of human nature. Now, all commerce, all advertising, all religion, all social systems, all societies are based on manipulating this fear of the great, this fear of death, this fear of aloneness. Now, this is endemic to the human being. That's why it's like this cliche that I use. It's like fish trying to describe water. It's all you've known. So to understand that all you've known is idolatry becomes almost impossible to comprehend. That's why the process of discipleship has to be face-to-face. It has to be confrontational in order to break through the protective devices. That's why the preaching of the cross is so dangerous. But the scriptures, Paul says, it is the preaching of the cross, which meaning not just that cross that happened back there, but the cross meaning your death and this acceptance of this totally new creation called Jesus is so dangerous, because it reveals at your core level these ancient fears and anxieties that you had all the time you're growing up. Now, you have to do something to stem the vulnerability. You got to believe. You've got to create a situation in which you have some way, some magic in your mind. I don't know if any of you remember some of these things. But you've got to create a way in which you create the magic in your mind that takes care of this anxiety and these fears. And in that is the basic development of your idolatry and your value systems. Now, from a primal perception, every human being that has ever lived, they want a move towards a place or feeling of well-being and move away from pain or discomfort. And the process of moving towards well-being and away from pain is what created your you-ness. And also what creates Babylonic religion. Because as a disciple, the hallmark of a disciple is suffering and humility, not success and wealth and health. Well, we're out of time. We'll continue on this tomorrow. Does everybody understand what I'm talking about?
Well, an example of to take care of the vulnerability is those kids that get the machine guns ready and go into the high school.
Yeah. Well, and or what we see, like yesterday, with I was out sitting on the front porch because I thought it was going to rain. I didn't want to miss it.
Why quick?
And Connor, Ed brought his little boy, Connor, up to see me, and Connor had this huge
jet plane
toy thingy, and it the wheel fell off because he dropped it or something, and Ed was going to take it away from me, he was going to give it to me to have me fix it, and Connor just went insane, because that little toy, that thing was his magic to take care of all of his fears and vulnerabilities. And that's what prompted me to study what we're studying, because it's about idolatry. But fundamentally, the human race is in fear, is in bondage through fear of death. And that bondage, they don't even know they're in the bondage, because As we talked about earlier, people have to develop societal value systems so that what they are can work. And I mean, that's what, like in the 50s, my heroes were Mort Saul, Lenny Bruce, Kierkegaard. Those idiots. They're not idiots. And I did everything I could to. In fact, I stole a credit card and took off. And I went to New York to be in my Jerusalem, which was Greenwich Village. I thought that's where life was. Because I grew up in this little town in Arizona. When I got to New York, I was just crushed, because I thought I was pretty much of a nonconformist in this little resort town in Arizona. I mean, I was like my when I saw my friend, he said I was 50 years ahead of my time because I was taking heroin and grew my hair long and all that crap. But when I got to New York, to Greenwich Village, everybody there looked like me. They were non-conforming conformists, and it did something, you know. It blew away the imagery that I had about beatniks. And so when I saw the hippies and then all that come, you know, I just looked past through it, because I'd been there. Non-conforming conformists is their form of rebellion. But all of us have something like that. That that really its source is this great transgression, or the bondage, or doing anything we can to escape the bondage that we're all in because of this fear of death, or essentially the fear of separation. Everybody thought that I was certainly not afraid of anything. I wasn't afraid of separation. But I was afraid of separation from that which I valued. I didn't care about whether I was separate from the adults that I thought I was around. You know, so I'd go out in the desert alone. But that was drive my mother absolutely crazy. I used to go out in the desert for a week in the middle of the summer with nothing. And she thought, I mean, she was ready to call a psychiatrist. She probably should have. But it was still, it was fear of bondage. Being in bondage through fear of separation. Even though I separated myself in order to not experience the fear of separation, because I had no commonality with the people that I was around. So,
yeah, people just reminded you of.
Right. I was different. I was separate. I was. So, I mean, even when you go along, if you become a hermit, even if you go out in the, you know, and live in the desert, the motivation is still the same. It's you're in bondage through fear of death, through fear of separation. Well, we'll continue this. Hopefully, if I'm able to, God willing,
all
tomorrow.
All this happens on such a subconscious level that, you know, consciously we're not.
Right, you just blissfully glow. You know,
that's why it says secret faults and presumptuous sins.
Yeah.
It takes in everything. It takes in the stuff you know is going on, you do anyway, and the stuff that you don't know why it's happening.
Let me go back to that. I'm glad you said that. That's what I wanted to emphasize. In Psalm 19 again. Who can understand his errors? How can you understand it? Cleanse thou me from secret faults. Keep back thy servant also from presumptuous sins. Let them not have dominion over me. Then shall I be upright, and I shall be innocent from the great transgression. Because you know you are in union. You are one with God. And all of these things that upset you are the places in which you don't you think that you're not one there. You are just like Adam in the garden when he hid and said, and God said, "Who told you you were naked? Who told you you needed something? Who told you things needed to be different than they are?" Now this stuff is difficult to understand and because it requires you to be amazingly honest with yourself and remember the fears and anxieties that molded you. Okay? But again, the reason we're doing this is so that we can see that these idols that we are worshiping, giving breath to, instead of, we are loving the idols instead of loving God with all our heart, our soul, and our mind. That's why that it says that's all the law and the prophets hang on, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, thy soul, and thy mind, neighbor as thyself. All the commandments, all the prophets hang on that. What? Okay. Anybody else? Anybody have any expansions on the tale or comments?
Well, I guess what I was thinking was, this is so, the sphere of separation thing is so big and scary that one of the ways of dealing with it is to not be aware of it, is to not know it, is to not remember it. It's like everything you just said the last 20 minutes, I knew
absolutely clearly the last time we studied it, what, 5 years ago? I've completely forgotten. I know this, but I forget this because it's just one of the ways of dealing with it.
Well, remember that it took Christ 30 years. It took Paul 21 years before he wrote his first letter. It took Moses 80 years before it took Abraham 100 years. I mean, and again, I don't believe that every person that names the name of Christ has to do this. But I believe we have been called to go into this arena for the sake of everybody else. Not just everybody, the rest of the body of Christ, past and present and future, if there is a future. So, but if you're here, then you are called to partake of this, to participate in it. For most people, I believe that God is well satisfied with the very simplest, the very fundamental thing, that salvation is in Jesus Christ, and the blood of Christ has cleansed me from all sin. But just as though before Christ could be transfigured, let me remind you of this. One person had to see that he was the Christ, the Son of the living God. And that's what, as soon as Peter saw that, then he was transfigured. And so I believe that the entire body, the entire people that were believers, didn't have to see the same thing. Just as, the things that people do that are different than we do, they're doing for our sake. So there's no pride in what we're doing. In fact, it's probably the opposite. Understand, Michael?
Yes, it might be so much more,
fear of separation is essentially loss of your old life. That's what it comes down to, isn't it?
No. Separation is loss from something that you think is important. Separate from something that you we'll get into that hopefully tomorrow, but the first expression of that was, the most people's glop onto, and when they're infants, is the mother figure. And when that does, many times that's the first word they learn is mom or mommy, because with her is nourishment and warmth and comfort and protection. But mostly it's with her is not separation.
Yeah, well, being peace.
When it's like separation from anything you think is giving you life.
Right. But the point, you can't forget the universality of this. It's that all men are in bondage through fear of death or fear of separation. And that is the great transgression. The fear of separation. It's a great transgression because he will never leave you nor forsake you. And he is the source of life. He is life. He's not just the source. He is life.
So we need that fear.
Well, it's easy to say. People repeat that as a mantra, but...
easy for you to say. Yeah.
All righty.
All you gotta say.
Take it, big guy.